This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Daylight breaks over the ridge. The hounds strike. No crowds, no cameras, just a track and the hounds that bring the story to life. That's what this show's about. Dogs, dirt roads, early mornings, and the people who live it. This is Creekside Chronicles. Hounds, hunting, and heritage. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, houndsman, hunter, and lifelong student of the outdoors. Here, we chase more than game. We chase knowledge about hounds, hunting, and living the outdoor life the right way. From bear country to back roads, this is where the hunt meets heart, and every story runs a different trail. So pull up your chair by the creek, leash up your best hound, and let's get after it together. Performance starts in the feed. Inukshuk's high-fat content fuels long runs and hard hunts, giving dogs the steady energy they need, while quality protein supports faster recovery after the work is done. That's why I trust Inukshuk dog food. Packed with energy and nutrition, dogs need to go further, run harder, and recover stronger. If you want extreme performance, you can look them up at Inukshuk Professional Dog Food or CoreyNutrition.com.
Welcome back to the Creekside, where we talk about everything from the woods to the water. If you've been listening along, you're already part of the Creekside crew. Just pull out that chair. I'm going to grab another log from the pile out here, throw it on the fire. We can get this episode started. Before we get into the stories and the training, I want to thank you for joining us. But I want you to grab a cup of coffee, settle in, and come on back with me to Alaska. We're going to finish this one up on that unforgettable adventure that we took. And I'm going to talk to you about some hidden gems. So after we left the northern part, well, the mid region, we left Denali. We went down to the Kenai. I talked to you about the sign and the moose. How it says that 238 moose have been struck since July on the roadways of the Kenai Peninsula. And it kind of wigged me out. I'm like, how many moose are in the state? We talked about that, right? So we go down. And we stay in Soldotna, which is kind of in the middle, for us. So the first day we was in Soldotna, we just piddled around there and kind of learned the area, went to the grocery store. Thank goodness for Fred Meyer's, which is owned by same company as Kroger. We went to a beach, and that was on the Kenai Point. And the water was cold. The sand was brown. extremely brown. There was some guys that had pulled vehicles out there. They had some type of big shindig party, something going on. They had a bunch of, they had a fire going, which was pretty interesting. And they were playing spike ball. And if you guys don't know what spike ball is, the guys at my gym are absolutely is obsessed with spike ball. You take a little ball, and there's like a little trampoline, and you spike the ball down on the trampoline. I can't get into it, but they love it. But that's what they were playing out on the beach. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, 4,000 miles away, they're playing spike ball on the beach. And I've never seen anybody play it other than at the gym. So that was neat. So the second day, we go down to Homer. It was a pleasant surprise. It was not what I expected. You know, after watching Life Below Zero and you see those things, it was definitely different. They had a part of the town that was basically like a boardwalk with a bunch of shops, and they had restaurants, and we ended up eating at Patty's. We ate at Patty's. Had fish and chips. You cannot be on the shore and not eat fish and chips. But that's me. I like it. I ate it a lot there. And we did some shopping. We walked out on the pier where all the boats and stuff come in. It was really, really nice. So if you ever go there, that is a place I would recommend. And then where do we go next? Oh, I got to tell you about our fishing trip. So Maddie and I ended up, we took a fishing trip. I had booked it. I wanted to go on the Kenine. I wanted to go trout fishing. That was my goal. But trout season didn't come in until the day before we left. So I didn't want to spend the whole day before we left gone. So we done it the day before. So we ended up having to go salmon fishing. Well, let me tell you, this was an experience. Not what I had in my head that it was going to look like and going to be like. So we met up with our guide, Brad. He was actually from Pennsylvania. I think I may have stated this in one of the previous podcasts. He went to school in Pennsylvania, then ended up getting his grad from Montana. Him and his buddy went out there after they graduated just to go, and he never went back. And that seems to happen a lot for people that go to Alaska. So he's a school teacher by trade, but in the summer, spring and the summer, he guides fishing trips. So it was really good meeting him, talking to him, and just learning. So we met him early one morning, the Wednesday morning, and got squared away. So we drove down. We ended up fishing on the Castle Off River. So one thing I didn't understand, I didn't know. I guess I hadn't done my research, and I don't know because I don't have salmon here. I got trout, bass, catfish, striper, walleye, muskie, everything but salmon. So we go down to the boat ramp, and there's like 7 or 8 boats already there. Now it's early, like it's cracking daylight early, and I'm like, holy crap. And he's like, no, don't worry. He's like, usually there's 50 boats here. And I'm like, what? And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, this is nothing. So everybody's putting their boats in. We take a couple pictures and we start down the Kessel Off, and we go maybe a mile or two down. We just float. We get to this point, they pull over to the side. He anchors the boat. There's already 2 other boats on this little point. And he said, the last couple of days, fish have been running. It's been a really good spot, so we're going to stay here. So he gets out and he explains to us, okay, this is what we're going to do. He gives us a fly rod, but it's got a big sinker on it and a leader and then a hook, and just a single hook, not a treble. And he says, you're going to throw it out. You're going to follow it down through the current, and you're going to rip it back to you. And I look at Brad, and I'm like, Brad, so basically you telling me we're going to snag these fish? And he looks at me, and he goes, no. He said, we call it flossing. this is what you do. And he demonstrated again. And he takes the rod, throws it out, lets it float, rips it back to him. And I said, well, in Appalachian America, we straight up call that snagging, and it's illegal. So he laughs, and that's what we did. We flossed. We went flossing. You floss, and you hope to catch the fish in the mouth because they come up river with their mouth open. We did that for hours. And when I say hours, my shoulder was getting tired. Not the fishing that I had envisioned. We decided that this is not being fruitful because we didn't catch anything. And I'll just give you this tip because it's a learning experience, right? Some of you guys may not have been salmon fishing in Alaska or anywhere else and maybe not didn't know this. So when the fish leave the ocean, salt water, they don't eat again. So that was the first thing I didn't realize. And then, of course, they go up to their spawning areas, and that's where they reproduce, they protect, and then they die. And then they go back into the ecosystem, and it's amazing how much a part of the ecosystem that relies on the fish to take that cycle of life. I mean, it's crazy. So if they're not eating, you got to floss them, snag them. And if they're not running because the tide was low, they come in on a high tide. It was interesting. So we moved on. We went downriver to a pinch point. Now we did see fish. Now I have to tell this. A couple of the deep pockets, you could see the fish jumping, coming up to the top of the water, and I'm like, well, what are they doing? If they're coming up out of the water, are they eating? And he's like, no. He's like, they're just being fish. They're just jumping and swimming around. And he said, once another wave comes up, it'll push them up river. So they'll stay in those pockets until it gets crowded, and then they'll push up. Well, you can't fish for them there because it's too deep. So we go down to this pinch point. It's a really good little spot. We anchor up. We get out, and we're flossing again. Well, lo and behold, old Maddie, she ends up hooking one. She had no clue. Like, she was dragging and snagging, and she's like, Dad! So I turn around and look. Well, that fish is jumping out of the water. It's going crazy, and she's doing that. So Brad comes around, and he's telling her what to do. And, man, that thing took off on a run, and it run downriver for a good ways. So he finally waded out there, and we got the fish in, and we got it. And she is a nice fish. It ended up feeding four of us. One fish fed four people. So that was a pretty good accomplishment. So we stayed there for a little bit longer. She hooked another one, and it got off. And lo and behold, I didn't catch anything. Like, I didn't. My daughter is a queen of snagging, and her dad is not. I will say that. I was not very successful at flossing. So we floated down. We seen so many bald eagles. I mean, that day, I bet you we seen close to 50. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing. The scenery, you know, being on the river, just how things, they do things differently. And we went to another point and fished again. We fished till my arms were tired. But it just wasn't a very productive day. Other than being in Alaska on a river out in the wild, enjoying and soaking up every minute of it. So the fishing experience was different. I do want to go back, and I do want to go trout fishing on the Kenai. So Thursday, the next day, I can't remember where we went. Oh, and I got to tell you about Hope, Alaska. There is no hope in Hope, Alaska. So I don't remember where we went the next day, but there was boats, people standing in the river. I don't know how the fisheries actually sustain that type of pressure, but according to Brad, they're fine. Unless you're fishing for king salmon, and that's a different story within itself. So let's go back to Tuesday. Tuesday, we decided that we're going to go to this little mining town called Hope, Alaska. So it's about an hour and a half from where we're staying. So we drive up, the main road towards back towards the Turnagain Point and take a left, and we're driving up this road, and I'm like, do you not think it's strange that we're not seeing any vehicles? Everybody's like, no, no, not a big deal. And we're not seeing any houses. We're not seeing nothing. Like, I mean, nothing. So we drive on like 20 miles and we come into this. We see a couple, there's a little store there. I guess that's what you could call it. They did stop and get ice cream on the way back. So store there, and we drive on in and we drive plumb to the end of the road, which takes us into a campground on the backside of the Turnagain Point. And there are some campers there, but not many. There's nothing here. I mean, when I say nothing, I mean nothing. So we come out of the campground. We drive back to where there's a little, several little buildings, houses, structures, whatever you want to call it. So we turn down in there, and it's the old mining town. Well, because the book that we were going by was outdated, everything in that book was vibrant. I mean, the stores, everything was running, ice cream shop, two little stores to go through, everything. Well, this place had shut down. So we drive through town. When I say drive through town, we drove past like six structures to the end of the road, which comes to a sign that says something about the point. So we walked out on the point on the backside again of the Turnagain Point. And we take some pictures and we walk back. And I mean, it's like desolate. Like the only people there was the three or four vehicles that probably thought the same thing we did, that Hope was a little thriving gold mining town. Well, it was not. So as we're leaving, the kids want to stop and get ice cream. So we pull into that store, and the poor little girl that was working the counter, she's asking about what's going on, and, you know, is this your first time to Hope? We're like, yeah. And, well, how long are you going to stay? And we're like, we're on our way out right now. And come to find out, the population is like 161. I don't know where 161 people were, because when I say ghost town, straight up ghost town. So they got ice cream or drinks or whatever. So she did tell us that the best place she's ever eaten a burger was back towards where we were staying. So on Thursday, after we got back from Stewart was a disappointment. We did go to the Exit Glacier, and we weren't quite prepared to, if you do the 8 mile hike, I think it's round trip, 8 miles, you can walk right out on it. We weren't really prepared for that. But now I'm going to tell you, there was a foreign guy and girl that were dressed to the nine with boots, hiking boots, pants, jackets, hats, sunglasses, cameras. They could have probably spent a week up there. And the carrying the stuff that they had was more than, I'm a minimalist. Like, I don't want to carry no more. I don't even like carrying myself sometimes, but they had a lot. So we did go to the Exit Glacier. It was kind of neat that they had signs, like year signs, like 1825 and 1917 and 1953. So everywhere those signs were is where the glacier was at that year. And you can see how it's like, it's disappearing. Like that was pretty neat. And then we drove into Seward and went to the, what do you call it? The marina, I can't think of the word. The museum. Aquarium. That's the word I'm looking for. Aquarium. We went to the aquarium. Sea lions are absolutely enormous. That's the first time I've been up close and personal with one of them. Seals are nice. There's lots of birds. So, yeah, went and seen that. It was so windy. The water was so choppy on the point there where we parked. But we did see several people that had posted pictures and videos of whales coming up literally right there where we were at. But the water and the wind was so bad the day we were there, it was just, we didn't see it. So we come back and we stopped at the little brewery and eat the hamburger. I'll give the girl credit. it was a very good hamburger. I would definitely go back there and eat again when I'm in that area. And it was on the outside. It was on the front side of the Kenai River before you go across the bridge where they put all the boat launches and stuff. So that was Thursday. And then Friday, I'm going to tell you about a little hidden gem. So we're going back to the airport. We got plenty of time. Our plane don't fly out till 8. I got to turn the car in, the rental car in at 6. So we get up, we piddle around, do whatever. And we're just taking our time. And we're going back around the bottom side of the Turnagain Point. And it says Whittier. And it's like 15 miles or 17 miles. And they're like, well, let's drive to there. There's a glacier there. So we're going to look at it. So we drove in, did not see the glacier, the fog, but we get to this, you got to pay a toll. And I'm like, what are we paying a toll for? Why are we doing this? So we turn around and we're getting ready to leave. And we pull over to the parking lot to look at the glacier. And then we're like, well, let's just go see what the toll's for. Like, what are we doing? And there's a line of traffic there too. So that was another thing. We turn around. We go back to the toll. And we realize it's a tunnel. You're paying a toll to go through this tunnel. And I think it was $13, maybe $11 or $13. And they tell you to get in lanes 1, 2, 3, or 4. So we went and got in lane. And the green light lets each lane go, and you can't drive more than 25 miles an hour. Your light's on, and you're literally driving in a combined train tunnel and a vehicle tunnel. So we were driving on the train tracks through this 2.5 mile tunnel that takes you into Whittier. And the guy said that it is a non-tropical rainforest, like that it's tropical, like a rainforest. So it's moist, it's raining, it's wet a lot of times. We pop out the other side of this mountain, and it's just a little hidden gem. Again, it's got the waterway where you come in and the boats are at. It's got a little small town, and we get out and we're walking around. And you can smell the food. And it's like, this smells so good. And I followed my nose. That's what we do, right? I got a little dog in me. I follow my nose and we go to this little shack. And I'm like, are we going to eat here while we're here? Everybody's like, well, we can. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm eating here. It smells good. This is a hole in the wall. It's packed. Standing room only. I'm eating here. So we walked around and piddled for a little bit, took pictures, and then we go to this little shop and eat, and it was really, really good. Like, the fish and chips, again, I'm eating fish and chips. It was good. And I'm going to tell you the name of this place as soon as I can dig the picture out of my picture album. It was phenomenal. Swiftwater Seafood Cafe. That was the name of it. So if you're ever in Whittier, I can highly recommend that you go there and eat. Spend a couple hours there. We drive back, get to the airport. Pretty much that's the end of our trip. So there was some really good things with Alaska. There was some hidden gems. There were some, I'm not going to say disappointing, because you get to travel, you get to see these things. It's not disappointing, but let down. Maybe a little bit more let down because of the expectations that you had for certain areas. But I would go back to Alaska for sure. I enjoyed it, and I want to do a couple other things that I didn't do. I didn't get to go to Katmai. I want to do that. I didn't get to go to Juneau. Didn't get to see some national parks on the other side, so that is going to be a future endeavor. Don't know when. As long as the good Lord's willing, and both feet, I can stay upright, both feet above ground, we're going to make it happen. So that ends up the Alaska adventure. I was going to get into some more training stuff with Zeke. I'm not going to I'm not going to go into that really right today because I got some other things I want to talk about. I did have a failure on a track. I moved him from the hide to the remote control car, which puts out very little odor. He would take it about 20 yards and then come back and look at me. I'm going to have to back up and redo the hide for to build his confidence up a little bit. But I did leave it. It was 69 degrees outside, 73% dew point, and the humidity was in the 90s. And I let it set for almost 40 minutes. So that was probably a big part of that. So I'm going to back up and get that lined out. I'm still working on the project dog in the truck, feeding in the truck. In fact, this evening, I'm going to go back at it again. I watched a great video with Cameron Ford and Pat Nolan. And I know those names mean nothing to most of the listeners, but Pat Nolan is a phenomenal dog trainer. And they talked about some research studies that had went on with imprinting puppies at a very young age, at like 8 weeks old. I'm going to get into that through the next couple of podcasts up into training season. It was very interesting for me, and you guys know I like to learn. I love to learn. I like to know how dogs think and what makes them tick, and anything that I can do to make the foundation better. And with the research and some of the studies that they talked about, I think I'm going to be able to. I do it, but I don't do it at that age. Like, I don't, you know, if you're not raising puppies, you're not, if you don't have your hands on the puppies at 8 or 10 weeks old. And Pat even said that if he goes and picks up a puppy, the first day he brings it home, he starts this process and he works it and then lets the dog mature. And then he goes back to it and the dogs just kind of take right off. So we're going to talk about that over some episodes, but because it's July 15th, we have 16 days to our training season comes in. I know a lot of you guys are already running. My buddy's in New York. Bob's running. In fact, next weekend, I'm going to be up with Bob, Uncle Bob. Hopefully them black dogs ain't wearing off on my tricolor dogs. Ross and them are hunting in Wisconsin. Doug and them's hunting in Vermont. Maine's in. Like, everybody's hunting except me. So I'm excited. 16 days. I got to make it through 16 days, which brings me to this. What are we doing to prepare? I know George put out a post about getting the dogs in shape. That, you know, each to our own. Everybody does things a little different. Some people don't have the ability. Right now, I don't have the ability to take my dogs out and road them because I don't have anywhere to do that with a good road that is not on national forest. So it kind of eliminates me. I've been letting them out in the yard when I mow. You guys know that. But let's talk about some things that I'm doing. I've made sure that I have got my flea and tick stuff ready. So before I leave next, so this is on Wednesday. I'm leaving Friday morning to go north to New York. Thursday evening, I'll give all my dogs that I'm taking, which are all young dogs. It's probably going to be another painful experience for me, but that's what I'm doing. I'm going to make sure all my dogs have Bravecto. I'm making sure right now, because I've got a couple weeks, that I have enough Bravecto in stock that I can give it to all my dogs come August the 1st or July 31st, however you want to work it. Sometimes I'll give it to them a day or two ahead of time. That way, it's got time to get in their system. So Bravecto is a must. That's one of the things that I'm making sure that I've got in the dogs and I've got enough in stock to last me through season. That's one of the first things I'm doing. Because it's hot, I am making sure that I have my dogs are treed glycerol mix. I'll take that with me and I'll have it ready for August. So I'm making sure that my stuff is stocked up. Like, I'm making sure that I got stuff to work. So my glycerol I make sure I've actually got two bottles of it, so I've got enough to do me for a while. I have it. I'll mix it up. I'll take it with me next weekend. And then in August, every day that I go out the door, I have a gallon of it mixed up, ready to use for the dogs. I did see that Buddy put out a thing for the tracking collars. I actually charged my Alpha XL, and it had an update. So I've got that stuff done. I'll charge my collars to make sure they don't need any updates. I'll get my handheld out. I'll make sure it don't have any updates. I'll make sure everything's charged and working properly, right? Spend a day or so preparing. That means when I get out in the woods, I'm not having some failures that I wasn't prepared for. So little things like that is what I'll do in the next 16 days, which because I'm going this coming weekend, it's forcing me to do them a little bit quicker. But when you are prepared, things go a lot smoother instead of waiting to the last minute. And I've done it. I've waited till the last minute, throw my stuff on, go out the door. And then we don't have signal or the collar's dead. Or it charged and it's dead. It's not working. I've learned to take a couple extra days, a couple extra hours, and prepare those things so I'm not having to deal with it in the first week or so. Because that's when everything pops up and you have all your problems. Preloading the dogs with food. I've cut my dogs way back this summer because of the heat and trying to keep the weight off of them instead of putting it on them. I will, because the running that we do, I will preload them. That means that 2 or 3 days before August the 1st, I'm just going to use that as an example, so let's just say the 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st. That's 4 days. So the 29th, 30th, 31st, 3 days before, I will preload my dogs. So I will feed them extra because after that first week of them running, after being in the pen, they're going to burn energy. They're going to burn calories that I'm not compensating for right now. And I don't want them to go from looking healthy, which they do right now, to not looking healthy. So I'm going to preload them. I'll feed them a little extra. That way, when that initial shock wears off, my dogs are maintaining level and they're good. They got plenty of energy. They're not having to compensate for the weight loss by me continuing to feed them the lesser amount. So I'll preload my dogs for that 3 days before. My dog box, I usually keep my dog box on my old truck pretty much year round. And I've found that it will rust on the bottom if I don't get the moisture and stuff out of it. So I have unloaded it. I have taken a wire brush, making sure everything's good. I've repainted it. I actually painted the bottoms of my dog box. Now, my old box is made out of tubed metal, not aluminum. So it's a little different. But I actually took bedliner spray, colored bedliner spray, and I sprayed the bottom of my box up to about 4 inches in the bed. That way it helps with that erosion and moisture and heat and cold and all that stuff. And it helps protect the metal on the tubing on the box. So that's something else that I've done in the last month to work on that. So take time to do the little things that matter. And that way, when season's in, you can enjoy it and not be stressed out because you weren't prepared for the things that go wrong. Med kit, that's something else. I went through my med kit this morning, made sure everything, I had plenty of stuff in it, make sure my stuff wasn't horribly out of date. And I will take that with me this weekend too. You know, I've got surgical glue. Of course, I got my staple gun. I carry Remedial and Cilflexin with me when I go on trips. That way, if I have any problems, I can help with that. Bandages. I carry the saline spray. You can go to CVS and get the bottles of it. I've got 4 bottles of it that I carry with me, and I keep 2 downstairs just in case I run out. And I think they're like, I think I told you guys wrong last time. They were $4.99. I think they're up to $7.99 for the spray bottles. I was carrying the saline bags, but the spray bottles are just more convenient and work better. So I transitioned over to them. So I bought me a handful of those things, and I carried several in my bag, and then I've got extra in case I run out. So med kit, something else, your Benadryl for your bites and stuff like that. So be prepared. And over next week, we'll go over a few more things. If you guys aren't busy and you're local in Virginia, or even West Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, all our neighbors, the VBHA is having their meeting in Tazewell at 2 o'clock on July 25th. After the meeting, they'll have their cookout or dinner, family get together. So we'd love to see everybody there. We need to get more involved. That's something else that we're going to be talking about in the future is, like, as hunters, we have got to get more involved. I'm not even going to go down that rabbit hole today because I have a lot to say about it. But we got to get involved. We got to start taking time to protect the things that are important to us. And it's not about us anymore. It's about the future. It's about our kids. It's about our grandkids. If we want them to continue to do what we do, then got to get involved, because somebody is not going to do it for you. If you're not doing it yourself, then who's doing it? We wrap this episode up. Everybody should become a VIP member for W Hunting Supply. Get you some perks. Get your phone number straight into their address book. You can text them, order stuff right off the line, right off the text messages. You get a little swag bag each month for being a VIP member. It's well worth the money, I'll tell you that. I enjoy my stuff, and I enjoy my perks from having it. So I would suggest everybody look into that, join up for the program, and enjoy the amenities that come with it. That's going to be a wrap for this week's episode of Creekside Chronicles. We appreciate you spending your time with us, whether you're in the truck, in the woods, or sitting by the creek just listening along. Thank you for walking this trail with us. Until next time, keep your dogs fed right, those leads tight, boots muddy, and we'll see you at the tree.
Tailgate drops before the light, coolers packed and the rig sitting right, tracking collars charged, beeping green, boots in the bed and the rifles clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum, we're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Ring barking like he knows what's near, nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, we're burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale, through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog in old WV, North Carolina's pines echo loud with the cry of a hard-run hound. New York forest, Maine's deep snow, Vermont valley's where the black bears go. Truck keeps rolling, wheels don't care, we're chasing daylight, chasing bear. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear, Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun set red in Tennessee, rise through the fog. Cry of a hard-run hound. New York frost.
chasing beer. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise golden Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care. We're built for the road and chasing bear. So load the dogs and slam the gate. There's a trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to dusk, we're always there. Chasing daylight, chasing them bears.